Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever games, movies, and TV is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. Welcome to Roguecast, episode 261. And 261 is a big number, of course. It's not 250, it's not 275, but 261 is a much vaunted number in which you do a format change. Right?
Right, yeah.
I'm sure someone sent a format change to 261.
Yeah, this is the you're talking to the new Rogues.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
We're extreme.
I think we should have just gone back. We should have started to renumber.
This is Roguecast number one?
No,
Roguecast
no we won't go down that path.
No, Nick is right, and Dave, you're also right. So this is Roguecast number one, and also 261.
How are we going to do the legacy number?
Yeah, the legacy number.
300, okay. We'll go back to a legacy number.
Exactly. Yes. We're gonna be podcast. This is gonna be podcast one, and we'll continue that for about 30 podcasts.
People love that.
Yeah, it's not at all confusing.
And then we'll be at podcast episode 300.
300, and then after we do a few issues of that, we'll do a new podcast number one.
Yeah, all new.
But more seriously, we are doing a bit of a format change, just in times to kind of. We've been scrambling a little bit on time because UPS changed their rules, and we start our poll a little bit later.
So we don't have time to read quite as much as
right.
We used to. But still enough time to make picks, but probably not two picks.
Right. So we're going to aim for making one pick a week. We're going to go back to the original one pick a week and stop with the cheater picks, except for the weeks when we do a cheater pick.
Mm-hmm.
But then it'll actually be a cheater pick. And we're going to probably cut down a little bit on the news and maybe make a shorter podcast each week. We'll see. This week it'll definitely be shorter because we're a little short on time.
Right.
Which means I'm going to jump past all the store news. Just a quick mention that this weekend there's Magic the Gathering open house. We have Final Fantasy TCG. Very important note that we are closing early on Tuesday, July 2nd at 6 p.m. to go see Spider-Man. So if you are planning on coming in on Tuesday night and spending $1,000 at the store, please do that earlier in the day.
Yes.
Or come in Monday.
Or come in Monday. Or Wednesday. Any day is a good day to spend $1,000 at the store.
I agree.
And then the first weekend in July is the 2020 pre-release, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The week after that is the All Ages Awesomeness on Saturday, July 13th, and then a Final Fantasy TCG pre-release on Sunday, July 14th, and then we rest.
Sounds good.
All right. News. There's a few notable things. The big news probably that came down is that DC has officially killed Vertigo, which has been around for, I don't know, 30 years, 20 years?
I feel like it's formed in, like, what, late 80s or early 90s?
Early 90s.
Let's say 1989 for nice.
No, because I was working in a comic shop at the time.
Oh, okay.
It was, I think, 91.
All right.
So we're closing in on 30 years.
Right.
Like 26, 27, 28.
Yep.
And then
here's the thing. I think we all kind of knew this was coming, and Vertigo has been a bit of a shadow of itself for 5-10 years.
Honestly, since Karen Berger left.
Yeah, but they had some pretty notable hurrahs in there.
Since she left?
I don't know. Fables, wasn't that
She was still running it.
Oh, okay. When did she leave?
She left, I don't know, I think it was, I feel like it was like 5 years ago.
Okay, so when I said 5 to 10 years, you were just agreeing with me.
Yes, but what I'm saying is, what was the last hit for us with Vertigo?
I mean, technically right now, all the
Sandman
stuff is doing...
She left in 2012.
Oh,
so it's about 7 years ago. And since then, I don't know what they've done since then.
A lot of books.
They've had a lot of books.
A lot of, tries.
They've had niche successes, but I don't think any of them have
moved, weirdly, Astro City to the Vertigo line, even
though
it wasn't a particularly good fit.
Right.
And they're going to have to undo that now.
They did the big... Sandman kind of launched, felt like kind of a last hurrah attempt.
Yeah.
They've had a few books
is,
of the last
Is that going to wrap?
Presumably.
I mean,
or it'll just move to DC.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Like, I think, like, everybody must acknowledge Vertigo was a super mighty and positive force for the industry.
Absolutely.
At their best, they were the best, some of the best in comics, and that would be, I think, basically throughout the 90s. Sandman? Preacher, Transmetropolitan,
Planetary, or was that their Wild?
That was Wildstorm, but just got absorbed by them later.
Yeah.
I forget what all of that. I mean, there was also smaller but notable. I mean, Hellblazer was through that line, not
right.
Its entire run, but most of its existence.
Saga of Swamp Thing.
Swamp Thing, Hellblazer, and Shade the Changing Man, and Sandman all made their way as to the first Vertigo books.
Yeah. Saga of the Swamp Thing, which was like what it was when Alan Moore was writing it in like 81 or 82 or whatever he came on board, essentially paved the way for it. He is arguably the creator of Vertigo without being the creator of Vertigo, or rather Karen Berger.
Who was doing Swamp Thing when a Vertigo...
Oh, by the way, Doom Patrol is another one.
Oh, yeah, Doom Patrol. A lot of stuff that was at DC that they... Basically what was happening is that they had all these sort of mature reader superhero books that didn't quite fit DC.
Almost all of them written by Brits.
So they just...
Karen Berger got all the Brits.
And they decided to make the Vertigo line as like the adult line, and they added a couple books. One was Sandman Mystery Theater, and the other one I feel like was like... it was a weird book that they launched with. Was the other launch book. It was a miniseries like Sebastian O by Grant Morrison, maybe?
Yeah.
Like, I think that was the other launch book.
The Sandman Mystery Theater was...
Yeah, Sandman Mystery Theater was the first Vertigo book. First official Vertigo book.
What, Guy Davis on art?
Guy Davis on art.
Like, Matt Wagner writing. Books of Magic.
Yeah.
They had some other notables.
But those came out later.
Right, they weren't the launch ones.
Yeah. That was Matt Wagner co-writing eventually with Steven Siegel, but first was Matt Wagner.
Okay.
But yeah, and then they had several phases of sort of strength after that. Like Dave mentioned Fables, which was huge for us.
Right. And Why the Last Man.
Why the Last Man, that was the other one. Yeah, those two came about the same time. Yeah, yeah.
But essentially kind of what they did there with those series kind of got absorbed by Image.
Yeah.
That had a sort of a broader mandate. They didn't have to, it wasn't all sort of dark gothy things.
Yep.
And then they, I gather Image kind of just had better deals for creator ownership.
It's full creator ownership. It's not creator participation, which is different.
Right.
Vertigo
was a great deal at the time as these things were kind of beginning to get hashed out.
Well, what Vertigo had to offer was that it had the backing of one of the two major comic companies.
Right.
And unfortunately, that wasn't making enough of a difference in the market. Like, the Vertigo brand had suffered to the point where having a Vertigo book didn't mean you were going to sell more than an Image book.
Right. I think it was somewhat inevitable. Like, even if I think they had, like, even some of the best creators, I think Vertigo couldn't be as potent as it once was because you kind of can't recreate that.
Yeah.
It had a weird thing where there was also always kind of one foot in the DC universe, but it was at the dawn of mature readers' comics.
Yeah.
Like, essentially, some of those things simply became, you couldn't stay unique for having done mature readers' comics.
Right.
In a sort of sophisticated way. Too many other people were doing it.
It's just interesting to me to look at and think that there's definitely a world, an alternate timeline or something where Vertigo is the one publishing Wicked and the Divine and Die. Like, that fits right in with what Vertigo did.
Yeah.
Are
they making Walking Dead too?
I mean, yeah. Doesn't Walking Dead feel like it could have been a Vertigo book?
Yeah.
Somewhere they went wrong. Somewhere they quit being the cutting edge of that. And I don't know if it was their editors or their
I'm not 100% sure they went wrong. I think they actually maybe tried to hold on to their style.
Yeah.
And I think, like, as we've seen with Image, Image is successful because of what it allows people to do.
Yeah.
It also throws a lot at the wall and a lot doesn't stick.
This is true. Yeah.
But you know, like, they can do any kind of book they want now. They could do a superhero book, they could do a horror book, they could do a crime book like Criminal. Criminal could have fit at Vertigo too.
Yeah, for sure.
But Vertigo felt like the place where you did dark fantasy and weird dark quasi-religious stuff.
I don't know. Vertigo also had 100 Bullets.
Yeah, that's
and they true. Had, they had a long streak of sort of crime books.
Yeah, yeah. No, 100 Bullets is a good example. I feel like they basically didn't have to keep the creators around.
It's that they didn't have the editors with the voice. They lost Will Dennis. They lost Karen Berger.
But you know, does Image have editors with a voice?
No, but that's because all the creators are going to Image and doing whatever they want to do, and that's more compelling than having someone at Vertigo shepherding you.
Right. So would it have been better for them to allow more creator freedom and just also be giving total creator ownership?
I think probably. I also think they're probably their numbers they needed to hit to make Warner Bros. Happy were probably much higher than what you need to hit an Image.
Right.
It does feel to some extent like the market changed off from underneath them and they didn't adapt.
Yeah.
Which is too bad. We don't know what's going to happen to their backlist. Presumably, the backlist will just get reprinted as DC Black Label is what they've decided. The Black Label, which is a weird label to throw all their money behind, given that they launched that so poorly.
Yeah. But ultimately, people will forget that Batman's Wang was showing in their first Black Label book, and it'll just become the place that has the serious DC stories.
Never forget Batman's Wang.
Well, we definitely need a poster for that. What if we just make it the subtitle of the store?
What I think is interesting, it's being lost in this, everybody talking about the Vertigo, is that they also killed the new Zoom and Ink imprints.
I don't know what those are.
Those are the new...
The all ages and the middle grade
graphic novels, which have been doing very well for us.
Oh, that's too bad.
And well in bookstores. Now, presumably, they're just going to... It's now DC Kids, DC Proper, and DC Black Label are the three, like, levels.
Yeah.
But Zoom and Ink had a chance to really stand out in the bookstore market, and it feels weird for them to cut that out of the knees.
But they may still be coming out. They'll just be have a different branding.
They'll just have a different branding.
Okay. Well, you know.
As long as they're still coming out.
Rose by any other name kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, the question is, like, will it still maintain momentum, or will they hold on to that? Sometimes format changes throws people off too much.
Or will people even notice? The books are still coming out. Does it matter that they're not going to be through Ink and Zoom?
I don't know.
I tend to think not.
I kind of agree.
Yeah. I don't know. Without the imprint, I wonder if they're putting as much focus behind it.
Right. They might simply decide not to. I mean, I don't know if it's essentially a success enough for them.
Right.
You know, what kind of market penetration they wanted to get on that. But
yeah, it's interesting. It's a big story in the industry. Everybody's been talking about it. And
yeah, like, I'm both sad to see it go, but also, like, because we had sort of seen the writing on the wall, I would say as far back as like 10 years ago.
Oh, sure.
Not really a shock in any way.
Yeah, I'm disappointed on a theoretical level, but I'm disappointed to see the actual Vertigo go.
It did sort of roll out in a weird way. It was almost like it got leaked.
Yeah, yeah.
We talked about this a few days ago. I'm like, I don't know if there's a way that they could have kind of quite shut down and tooted their own horn and made a big, like, fond farewell, because I think that then it sounds like our company is dying. I think they had to, like, I mean, maybe this was as good as it gets, to just acknowledge it. And then they can maybe do, like, some tribute after a little while or something.
Yeah.
In other news...
real quick, favorite Vertigo book?
Richie? Why Last Man, I think.
Yeah. Why or Transmet?
I think I'd probably pick Sandman. I'd probably pick Sandman among those.
You know, it's interesting... Transmet was originally part of the Helix imprint.
Oh, man.
They had the short-lived attempt at doing sci-fi. And the problem was there weren't any strong launch books except for Transmet.
Yeah.
And so they all crashed. But it's a shame because a good sci-fi imprint would have been great.
Yep.
So there's another alternate universe where those were successful, and there's a bunch of sci-fi books.
What about an alternate universe where that's fighting it out with the Barkerverse, Clive Barker micro-universe that Marvel created?
Yes. Is it just possible that DC doesn't like its own imprints? They just want DC books. They don't want Vertigo and Elseworlds and all this other stuff.
I'm sure
they changed fractures with the wind on that, but I don't think that's not what did it.
No. I'm sure there are some people at DC who do not want the drain of going to a different imprints and that kind of thing. But I think in general that there's probably a lot of people who fight for it. Probably a lot of people fight for it at this point.
When you think about, like, essentially the careers that they launched, it's not like a lot of people didn't do anything before they went there, but they a lot of times popularized somebody. So say Ed Brubaker kind of started making a name. He wasn't a perfectly good fit for them, but he did,
Scene of the Crime.
And even, like, I know it was kind of a failure, but Dead Enders, but he had a foot in there. He even, I think, did some writing on some Sandman projects.
Yes, he did. He wrote Dead Boy Detectives.
Yeah.
I'm in that.
Neil Gaiman. Oh, that's right.
As a corpse, I think. No, I'm the not-seen boyfriend of one of the characters.
Neil Gaiman catapulted. I mean, he was always going to be big as a novelist, but he catapulted to, like, a special degree of fan stardom because of Sandman.
Hmm.
Garth Ennis became Garth Ennis, for sure. Grant Morrison rose to stardom.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Doom Patrol and Animal Man.
I'm changing my vote for favorite Vertigo series. It's actually Lucifer.
Interesting. Okay.
I love Lucifer.
That was always a big one.
You always talk about how you love Lucifer and the Dark Lord. It's weird.
I know.
And I'm like, okay. Does it mean the comic or the Antichrist?
Yes.
what else we got?
All right. So Marvel, meanwhile, is doing some slightly weirder stuff. They have announced one-act plays for high schools.
Yes, and so just from what little I quick skimmed on this, they are not like adaptations of Winter Soldier or something like that. They are like kind of teen-centric stories with their characters.
They are one-act stage plays that star different Marvel superheroes and are designed for the teen demographic. Now, I assume that you can get these. I was a theater nerd.
Yep.
I have a theater letter jacket that I got. One of the things you had to do to join the Thespian Society was to direct a one-act play. So I directed a one-act play that was like a goofy thing. There was like a spy from like Russia and Great Britain and the U.S. and it was like a farce kind of thing. It was a little short play.
Okay. So
I assume that these plays are going to be available to young teenagers who want to direct plays, but instead of starring weird, goofy spies, they will star, for example, Loki and Thor.
The Loki and Thor one was – we talked about them having to go through like some Asgardian rites of adulthood or whatever.
Thor and Loki were the teenage versions of them competing for the favor of their parents through Asgardian rites of passage, written by two-time Tony Award-winning actor.
Huh.
And then there's a Squirrel Girl Goes to College,
okay,
which is written by the founder of the Young Playwrights Theater. And then there's an award-winning composer and playwright written called Mirror of Most Value, a Miss Marvel play with Kamala Khan.
That all sounds potentially interesting. But I'm just thinking, like, so I saw that Squirrel Girl play.
Yep.
I feel like high school students have an interest in, like, you know, what it means to go off to college and that big sort of change in their lives. But also somewhere in there will be like a woman who controls squirrels.
Yep. Yep.
And
somebody will obviously be playing a squirrel because they do talk.
Does Tippy?
I think Tippy to maybe she makes squirrel can understand. Sounds. You have to make squirrel.
Yeah, she can understand. Yeah.
Actually, that's that makes a perfect foil for like soliloquies and monologues and stuff like that. You can be like, Tippy, I don't know if I'm feeling the college admissions procedure. And then, you know, then she goes into the thing. And then she's like, hang on a minute. Dr. Doom is attacking. This sounds fun.
This sounds like a lot of fun. And it looks like there's original art from Erica.
Henderson,
thank you. On each one of the covers. So, yeah.
Erica Henderson, who draws
Squirrel Girl.
Right.
To be honest, I kind of.
They should adapt Elektra Assassin.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah, I kind of want to get these now. They're released for retail purchase and licensing through within the educational theater market. So Marvel's expanding, and that's kind of cool.
I think we should appoint Cliff Coates to these.
Yeah, for sure. everyone we know who teaches or knows high school theater kids. And then speaking of Marvel expanding, Disney has, now that Star Wars Galaxy's Edge is open, and I'm super jealous of everyone who's been there, they have the permits to open Marvel Land. So you guys should know that my retirement plan is to dress up like D-Man and go live in Marvel Land and just be D-Man forever.
So they're going to be evicting you on a daily basis.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be a smelly homeless D-Man.
Well, it's good to have goals.
Yep.
There's like no information about it yet, per se.
No.
What would you put in a Marvel Land if you were going to have stuff like that?
Helicarrier. If I can't walk on the deck of a helicarrier, they have failed.
I think that's asking a lot.
No, the deck of the helicarrier, that's not crazy.
Right, they do a thing with it where they make it, you know, you like get in like a the Avengers, what do you call their, I mean, do they call
the Quinjets?
The Quinjet, yeah.
I mean, in Star Wars.
You feel like you're landing, and then, you know, they like kind of recreate what's like paintings and stuff around you or virtual stuff.
Yeah.
A sense of being on a Quinjet.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just saying, in Star Wars Land, they built the Millennium Falcon. You get to go on the...
They're not going to build... Well, that's what I should say. I don't think they're going to build a full-size helicarrier, but if they do, you will never see me again.
What if they built, Sokovia?
Yeah.
Was that what got wrenched up and where the Ultron battle took place on top of that? What if that's it? You get to go stand on top of a Sokovia a mile above the whole park.
I would like to see a part of this.
And get killed by Ultron.
What if it's the Avengers compound?
I would say, like, having the Avengers compound, having a part of Wakanda.
Oh yeah,
I would say Wakanda, Asgard, I don't know what they called. What's Planet Hulk called?
Sakaar.
Yeah. It'd be neat just to tour several areas. I think where it felt like you were stepping into them. Oh yeah, well, like if you had like this infinity, these portals, you would go through like Doctor Strange portals.
Yeah.
Into the different areas.
They have to build the Sanctorum.
And also if they do a ride,
that would actually be a cool opening thing. Like Doctor Strange is like, you know, welcome to the Sanctum. Through these gateways, you can go to many different worlds.
Except Doctor Strange will be a 17-year-old kid with acne.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome to the Sanctum Sanctorum.
Now, by the time it gets built, we'll have the technology to have Benedict Cumberbatch, like a hologram of Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange welcoming you to the Sanctum Sanctorum.
Or maybe some scandal will have reduced him to nothing and he'll be portraying himself.
Hello, I'm Benedict Cumberbatch. Please give me a dollar.
I could have been in Hamlet right now, but I've been a bad boy.
Yeah. And then I'll be like, here you are. Here's a dollar. Thank you, D-Man. Also, security. He's back.
I mean, do we specifically know if this is the MCU or is this just Marvel?
I mean, presumably it's going to be heavily based on the MCU. That's what people know.
As hell, have the Xavier's Institute or...
We don't know. But they're getting permits. They're actually doing it. And that means that that's where I'm going to live
in my retirement. So those are going to come out in like the year 2025 or something like that.
Yeah.
And at that point, the Marvel Universe movieverse will have collapsed after the failure of the Eternals movie. And we'll be like, oh, yeah, I went to the park once, and it was mostly I just felt sad because it reminded me of a good day.
It's like
going
to a Planet Hollywood.
Yeah.
Or it'd be like going to a Star Wars land after the prequels ruined everything.
But then they made a comeback.
I'm sure there – I know there's got to be a reference to the Gungans and stuff like that in Star Wars land.
There is while Marvel's making one-act plays for high schools and opening Marvel Land, DC is spinning off Lobo from Krypton.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, do we have opinions?
Hearing an opinion?
Yeah. No one here has seen Krypton.
No.
I've seen some clips from it, and Lobo looked weirdly skinny.
Yeah.
He also didn't quite seem right. I don't know if I can quite pin down what seemed wrong about him. I've seen different interpretations. Like, I really love the animated series version.
Is it the fact that Bradley Garrett wasn't voicing him?
Who's that?
That's the guy who voiced – Brad Garrett voiced Brad him Garrett, on Superman Animated.
Yeah. That was the iconic voice.
I liked him. But I would have been fine with somebody different because he was like a kind of cartoonish version of himself and so arguably somewhat neutered. I hope it has a crossover with Alfred is my favorite. Pennyworth.
Yes, good plan.
If Lobo crosses over with Pennyworth, I will watch it. Until that time, I don't care.
our customer and my co-podcaster, Fathery, has been watching, I think, Krypton. I think maybe just to see what the deal was with Lobo, but also to check out the series, and he seems to have been enjoying it. I remember he had said, he's like, I've watched 3 episodes and I'm going to keep going with it.
Because it's not Jor-El, it's like Jor-El's father?
Maybe even grandfather. It's, you know, I gather it's a kind of a Game of Thrones-ish thing from before their time that has like Brainiac involved in there, and then probably rival houses.
I'm sure Zod is in there somehow.
Yeah, no doubt.
In fairness, Father has some weird opinions.
It's true.
All right. Last bit. Taika Waititi is taking the title away from the Russo brothers and Lord Miller in like putting his name on everything. But he has announced another project, which is the Flash Gordon animation.
Right. Like an animated movie?
Yeah.
Right. So this I saw this article and it was linked. The cover art showed like the Flash Gordon from 1980 with the Queen score and all the super camp.
Max von Sydow.
Mm-hmm. And it has nothing to do with that. It is only another Flash Gordon property, just like every other Flash Gordon adaptation is. That just happened to be the one that most people know. I forget, Randy. I don't know if you're looking at something that has more detail on it. And I think it's not like nothing is set in stone on this one.
Right.
I think, but he may produce it.
Like I say, it's one of those feels like there was a while there were Lord and Miller with the new hotness and then the Russo brothers and they were attached to every TV show and movie. And I feel like Taika Waititi is in that ballpark now.
Now that said, looking at it like kind of like Thor Ragnarok, I feel like a kind of boisterous, energetic version of Flash that has, you know, the kind of the big action of sort of Marvel movies. But some of the humor of that and, you know, maybe even a touch of the camp humor of the 80s one, there's something to be done with it. And it's also probably a time to rethink a little bit of what we think about, like, old pulp sci-fi, all the stuff that inspired Star Wars, and see if there's, like, a new vision to be had of it.
Can I suggest something?
Yeah, go.
Taika Waititi's version of What We Do in the Shadows. by way of Flash, or Flash Gordon by way of...
So are we going to launch this rocket, or are we just going to kind of hang out?
That is the kind of thing...
I guess I'm the savior of the planet or something. I'm down for it. He should definitely play something. He should play Zarkov.
Yes.
I've got some theories.
All right. That's news for this week. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week.
One familiar cry. Rocast.
We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, June 26th, the final week of June.
Yes.
And I'm just going to jump right into it. Nick, why don't you give us your pick for the week?
Yeah. I'm going to talk about a crossover that I'm kind of shocked hasn't happened before. And that is Transformers and Ghostbusters.
It's actually not super obvious. One is kind of big robot adventure, and the other is ghost comedy adventure.
Yeah.
But they've, as licenses, they've been around in comics for a long, long-ass time.
Ghostbusters Men in Black made so much more sense than Transformers Ghostbusters.
And yet, Nick, I really enjoyed this.
Oh, yeah, I did too. I enjoyed it.
It's a fun idea. It opens up with a fun traveler coming to Cybertron.
Right, it's ancient Cybertron. And, well, when I was making the sign for it, I don't think this gives away too much because the sign doesn't actually even quite accurately depict what's happening, but the sign I made was from their solicit and said something about the ancient ghost of Cybertron from the war are rising up. And I do think that may play a part of it, but there's more going on that doesn't depict. That I think if you're a fan, let's just say if you're a fan of the Ghostbusters franchise, you will recognize something here.
Exactly.
And it's pretty neat.
It's a great opener, and then you get some cool Transformers stuff, and this is very much Transformers of the cartoon era.
Oh yeah,
with one notable addition.
With one notable addition, which I think is a fun addition.
Yep. I also have to say the events that directly preceded before they jump ahead to essentially the present.
Yeah.
There's a thing that occurs on Cybertron. A certain character involved in something that has Ghostbusters ties,
yep.
And it's hilarious and also kind of. One of those things where you're like, well, that's perfect.
Yep. We will not be spoiling anything because it is perfect and very much something you should read.
Yep.
Then it jumps to sort of the Transformers of the now, which is Transformers of the 80s.
Right. Mm-hmm. And a slightly alternate universe where they had not yet come to Earth.
Correct. And then we jump to Earth where we meet the Ghostbusters dealing with sort of ghosty things.
Yeah.
And I will say, the writer of this, who is it Chris Burnham? Or Eric Burnham?
No, somebody I didn't... Oh, is it one of the...
I don't know. I don't know who Eric Burnham is.
I don't either.
But I feel like he's got a really good handle on the voices, because especially the...
It's like the animated style Ghostbusters, too, right?
It kind of is.
I guess it's the way they draw them in the comic.
Yeah.
Which looks like kind of like a modern version of how the real Ghostbusters looked in the cartoon from the
80s, 90s?
Whatever that
80s,
was.
80s.
Right?
It was late 80s, early 90s, I think
it might have been, a little after the fact, it might have been early 90s.
basically jumps to them doing Ghostbusters-type things. They're on a job. Ecto-1 is in a hole because of things.
Yep.
I think all their voices are pretty spot on.
Yeah, like I was hearing it in the voices of, the actor, Dan Aykroyd and all those guys.
Yeah. And then, of course, they meet some Transformers.
Right. The events that happen that open the comic will kind of come to set things up.
I think there's just a good sense of, like what Dave was saying a couple weeks ago when we did the Batman TMNT crossover.
It's just got
this air of fun to it.
Right. And kind of in ways that I actually wouldn't have quite predicted. Like, if you had said, well, what can you do with Batman Ninja Turtles? I would not have guessed the kind of merged universe with the Krang... version of what's that guy called? The Anti-Monitor.
Yeah.
And I would not have guessed the events of this, but both of them were really good. Like, this is like a well-thought-out use of the properties.
It doesn't feel like a straight-up like cash grab. Like, we're just going to do this. It's going to be silly. This actually feels like a lot of thought has been put into it. And they're even going to release a toy of this character.
Oh, great.
Of the... his name, the Ectronimus. I forget. Ectronimus Dimatron.
Yeah.
Which is an awesome name, by the way, for a Transformer.
he's a fun new addition and a neat tie to get the Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Dave, what is your pick?
My pick is a manga adaptation of H.P. Lovecraft called H.P. Lovecraft at the Mountains of Madness. This has been adapted in at least one other comic, which is that sort of Tintin style one that kind of had the
European
style
art.
So, and I believe that was pretty faithful. This is also very faithful. I think the only thing it sort of, lacks is, if I'm not mistaken, last time I read this book, I think it might begin with a narrator saying whatever you do, do not come to the Arctic. And now I will tell my tale and you will know why.
Yeah.
And I think this, instead of having that sort of setup, simply shows his expedition.
They should do a crossover where the guy. No, where he got the guy telling the tale in the Arctic is actually telling it to Frankenstein.
Oh, interesting. I'd actually probably read it. they just did Junji Ito did an adaptation of Frankenstein.
That's what made me think of it.
So here's what's maybe most notable about this, and the what vastly separates it from the kind of European style of the other one. Is that, I mean, A, it's the manga format, which means you're going to get a long-form story. I believe this is maybe part one of two volumes that'll make up the whole thing. It is told in that, so it's got that cinematic style, but the art is like, has an almost photorealistic look, except for the, a little bit of, you know, manga-type characters. But it's even more realistic, I'd say, overall than, say, Battle Royale was. Mm-hmm. Like, the characters have that sort of look more real. There's a, they do that shading effect, so that you get these very night-like Arctic qualities, and there's really amazing detail on literally,
really pretty.
Like the first splash page where you see the mountains themselves is check it out, y'all.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And there's it's like one of several different pages panning across it, like it really feels like impactful when you see it. And for those who don't know, this kind of this story of like explorers finding sort of the lost civilization of like the godlike ancient rulers of the earth, the elder things, whose civilization kind of fell into turmoil when they're sort of like their slave race creatures, the Shoggoths or Shoggoths, yeah. However you say them, rebelled against them. I think there's also references to some of the other Lovecraft's other spacefarers, though, like the Migo, the crab-like creatures from Pluto, and some of the other ones I think may also get mentioned in here. Anyway, based on my memory, this was very faithful. Expanded kind of in the way you might do a movie, but I think only in a way that's, as far as I can tell, is faithful to it. I remember, like, these are exact scenes from the novel.
David, I know you and I both always kind of felt that manga does horror better than any other version of comics.
It has a, it has a sort of more, a more palpably eerie quality as they, you know, like, it's sort of, and it's also kind of a little procedurally, like Lovecraft's story was. Like this, they land, they set up their base camp, they find a previous group that had come before them that had, like, found one of these things and dissected it. So they like come across the dissected version. There's no doubt that this was the inspiration a lot for like John Carpenter's The Thing, which has like scenes that exactly mirror that. But and the idea of like coming across something that wrecked a party that came before you is right out of The Thing. And yeah, it is a creepy, there's a creepy vibe to it. And then a lot of that's the art, but it's also that the scenes have that breathing room that manga gives them.
You know what else in discussing this? Mm-hmm. I want them to do a crossover between Cthulhu stuff and Kaiju stuff.
Like, that'd be
that
cool.
Seems like a good fit, like the Lost Civilization, yeah. Especially the version of King of the Monsters and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm honestly surprised that like they haven't done something like that with one of the Godzilla movies.
Like Monarch, if they cross the Monarch like monster hunting guys over into Cthulhoid type stuff, I'd watch that.
Are the creatures? Do they tend to be protectors of the Earth? Is that like something going on in there?
Not all of them.
No, they're like the antibodies of the Earth.
Okay.
In some ways.
Well, since Lovecraftian things tends to be extra dimensional or come from like it also comes from Scary Places Under the Sea, which is Godzilla E2.
Yep.
Yeah.
And SpongeBob. So that's an obvious crossover too.
And also Little Mermaid. Sebastian versus Pacific Rim versus...
Who lives in a scary pineapple under the sea? Yes. SpongeBob.
Anyway, Mountains of Madness.
Sorry.
I have to look it up, though. The guy who did this is definitely a huge fan of Lovecraft, because that seems to be all he does.
My brother, I texted him about it just a little while ago to say, hey, do you want me to pick this up for you? You like Lovecraft shit. and he said, yes, please. And he said this guy has actually done, like, a number of Lovecraft adaptations, but he didn't think any of them were available in the States. So this may be, like, the first one that's been translated over.
No, there was one that I think we've actually had in the store.
I remember it. Yeah, yeah.
What is it called?
The Hound and Other Stories.
Oh, I don't remember seeing that one.
He also did, yeah, like, The Outsider and Mr. Nobody, which I think are not available in the States.
Okay.
That one I know we've had before.
Oh, cool. It sounds like this guy's maybe taking off as far as that goes.
And this is also a multiple volume thing, right?
At least two, maybe more. I couldn't quite tell, but my sense is that he would probably be able to finish it in two.
All right. My pick is Conan the Barbarian number 7, which this is called Life and Death of Conan Part 7, barbarian love. But what's interesting is while Jason Aaron is telling a big epic story of like the life and death in Conan, I feel like every issue has also been like a standalone because he's flashing back to Conan's life at various points, which I think is a really good way to do this series. And this one in particular takes place just after Conan has lost his pirate queen, Belit. And for reasons we don't quite understand at the beginning, he goes to Tortuga, a pirate island, which is probably Tortuga.
Yeah, a variant of.
And basically gets five prostitutes, buys them outright, and then takes them on a long road trip.
Conan.
For reasons, but he is not taking pleasure from them. He's bought them. He says, we're going on a journey. He won't tell them why. And then they slowly are like, well, if it comes to it, we'll kill him. And, you know, we've seen worse. And they slowly find respect for one another and then find out what he's doing. And there's a great Conan revenge scene.
Yeah.
It's really fun. It gets a little bit into the Conan Belit relationship and what he changed. And it does seem like each episode basically tells a little bit of like how Conan came to be the king that he will be at the end of the story. Mm-hmm. I really liked it. There's some fun stuff. As always with Jason Aaron and Mahmoud Azra, there's some pretty kick-ass action. There's some really fun moments, some good lines. This book is really good, and people should check it out.
Hey, you know what they should do?
What?
You know the Conan poem thing that starts so many of them about him treading the jeweled thrones of the earth beneath his, did they say sandaled feet?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You know, like on Smallville, they would try and explain every single thing about Clark?
Uh-huh.
When does he buy the sandals? And he wins them in a gladiator fight or something like that. I was like, where's the sandals he's going to tread on?
Yes, they should definitely do that.
It's just a thought.
Okay. also on the list this week, Runaways number 22. Really still liking this book, but it is very much for people who've been reading Runaways forever.
Right.
Wolverine Exit Wounds, which is one of their 80th anniversary one-shots, bringing in Chris Claremont, Larry Hama, who both wrote pretty long, extended Wolverine runs to do stories, and then a final one by Sam Keith, who writes and draws a Wolverine Venom story.
Yeah, if you want to see the big, hulking, lumpy, hairy version of Wolverine that Sam Keith did, like, notably draw in what Marvel Comics Presents.
Marvel Comics Presents.
Yeah, and it is iconic in its own weird way. It's a throwback to a lot of the fun of 90s Wolverine.
Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man is more of Spidey and the Prowler. Angel number 2 hits this week. And then I've not had a chance to read it yet, but Star Wars Galaxy's Edge number 3 I've been really enjoying. And the third issue features Hondo.
And if Hondo, you know, he's like a leader of a group of space pirates?
Yeah, he's in Clone Wars and Rebels.
Yeah.
And he is a great scoundrel, and I love Hondo.
You have much Hondo love?
I do. Dave, what else on your stack?
Let's see. There's a new issue of Rolled and Told, and I mention it for two reasons. So Rolled and Told being the kind of gaming, like RPG comic magazine. One is that there's an article in here on how to run a game for first-time players that had very good advice, I think, for somebody's first D&D game.
Mm-hmm.
And like what will be that is likely to be satisfying for players, what not to do. Ideas about like pairing it down to just sort of a few, sort of the key rules, making sure everybody kind of gets some cool moments and gets it like some cool trophies and stuff.
Yep.
Anyway, it's a really good just mini article, just a few pages. I also bring it up to mention that we sold out last week of the Rolled and Told hardcover, but we are getting some more in right now.
Yep.
We don't know how long they'll last because that seems like something that is maybe likely to go out of print.
Maybe, although it's back at a Diamond now, so maybe not.
Okay, but and they should still buy it now because it might disappear and be taken down into Satan's Hollow.
That's true. Good point.
There's a new IDW book called Kanto that is a kind of has an all-ages kind of dark fantasy vibe to it, about like a little sort of clockwork warrior. And they described it as Wizard of Oz meets Dante's Inferno. Or
how would you describe it?
But I was using their description.
Ah.
Let's see. And there's a new book from also from IDW called Marilyn Manor. Is she the daughter of the president?
She says first brat.
First brat. Yeah, she's the first brat of the president. And their description of this one was the apocalypse as directed by John Hughes.
Yeah. This is Magdalen Visaggio writing. I know both Julie and Anna are very, very excited about it.
At a quick glance, it looked good from what I saw. Nick, that's all I got. What do you got?
Just a few more things. There's a crossover book from Tim Seeley, which sees the Crow and Hack Slash come together. I didn't get a chance to read this, but I think if you're a fan of either of those properties, it's something you would look out for. Action Comics 1012 continues to see Leviathan and Lois Lane kind of butt heads.
On a date.
On a date. You know, the only way Bendis could write. Then War of the Realms. There's a lot of stuff for War of the Realms this week because it sees kind of a finale of sorts.
Right, there's going to be like an epilogue issue, but it's more or less wrapping this week.
Yeah. So War of the Realms, Punisher, and Uncanny X-Men, also Agents of Atlas, and then the final War of the Realms number 6, which has a final showdown between Thor and Malekith.
Who wins?
I don't want to spoil it.
Is it Malekith?
It's Volstagg.
Is Malekith the new star of the Thor comic?
That would kind of be interesting.
Malekith the elf.
Give us a Malekith.
But I will say that much of what Jason Aaron has written from the very beginning is touched on here, and it is quite awesome.
Cool.
All right. That'll do it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time, Yo Joe!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.